Welcome to Belfast City Vineyard, where we are pursuing formation in the presence of Jesus, community gathered around him, and the impact he empowers us to bring in our families, city, and the world. The following message was given at one of our Sunday services. For more information, visit our website at belfastcityvineyard.com.
Applause before is never the same as applause afterwards, right? But I'll take what I can get. And yeah, as Andy said, good to have you guys that are watching online. Love that you are with us wherever you are. And those of you who are watching in the future because you're running the marathon right now, good job. Hopefully. It's a demonstration of faith. Hopefully you're killing out there. Good stuff. Well, as Andy said, we've been in a sermon series, and this actually came off the back of a prophetic word that someone in our church shared with us, drawing our attention to a passage in Ezekiel 47. Ezekiel was a prophet in the Old Testament at a time when God's people were in exile, and he carried a number of messages from the Lord to encourage his people, to strengthen them, to call them back to fidelity to the Lord. And in Ezekiel 47, it's this vision that God has given Ezekiel, which is a bit weird if you're not used to visions. But ultimately, there's this river flowing out of the temple, and it represents God's power and his presence returning and flowing not just in that place of worship, but out from it into all the world around it. And as this river flows, what was otherwise impossible becomes possible. That where God's presence is, the impossible becomes possible. And all forms of different creatures begin to find life and habitation in rivers and streams that they shouldn't. And along the banks, we find these trees from Ezekiel 47:12 that we've been kind of drilling in on. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fail. Every month they will bear fruit, because the water from the sanctuary flows to them. Their fruit will serve for food and their leaves for healing. And we've been looking at this idea that in God, in relationship with him, somehow it's possible to bear fruit in every season of our lives. Trees aren't supposed to do that in the natural, but it's possible with God. And in our spiritual lives, this idea that we can actually be fruitful no matter what season of life we're in. And we've been trying to frame that and give that a bit of a paradigm for us. And most of us, we kind of have a binary narrative. It's either really good or really hard, right? It's go as hard as I can until I crash. And actually, that's not really how the Bible looks at seasons. That it's possible to live with rhythms and practices that actually hold us in fruitful places all year round. And we've been framing it in this idea of the seasons of the year, in spring, summer, autumn, and winter. Or as we've been looking at it with these reflections of preparation, execution, reflection, and rest. This idea that at different seasons of our lives, of the year, we should expect to see different rhythms, different patterns, and actually expect to bear different fruit. And we've looked at how this can happen in a day, in a week, across a month, or over across a lifetime. And each rhythm, each season, sorry, needs different rhythms. And we can bear different fruits. And if you were with us last week, Andy talked about this idea that some rhythms are needed in all seasons. And we get this naturally. Like, you can't stop feeding your children because you're tired, right? The answer is yes. We can't do that. You need to char all the time, whether you feel like it or not. You should char. There are just some things that we need to do day in, day out, season in, season out. And it's the same spiritually. We need time in the scriptures. We need time in prayer. We need Sabbath rest. We need to be together as a community and worship like we are now. There's some calling on our lives to serve one another in season and out of season. And all those things we need all the time. But they're going to look different in each season. They should look different in each season. And then in addition to that, there's some specific things for different seasons of our life. And if you were with us last week, Andy helped us think through autumn and winter, the seasons of reflection and rest. It was super helpful, well worth going back and listening to. This idea that we can't just go, 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 handbrake in to stop. That actually we need to prepare. We need to reflect on what's gone before we step into rest. And he brought this idea that I think is really important, this word for us, that there's something in our culture, this idea of weariness that hangs over us like a spiritual weight. That all that we've lived through in the last number of decades adds an extra burden to us. And for many of us, we feel constantly weary, or in the Belfast vernacular, knackered. And actually, that's not feeling. That we might feel guilty about that, like we're just not good enough, we just got to try harder, we just got to do more. But that actually there's something of a spiritual battle over our hearts, over our minds, over our lives. And when we try to fight guilt and shame and failure, we're fighting the wrong fight. We actually need to fight that weariness in a spiritual sense. If you missed that, I would highly recommend that you go back and pray for it. I think it was really important. But we're going to press on today and look at spring and summer. And maybe you're sitting there thinking, look, this is a nice idea, Alan. Like, good job. Well done, you and Andy. Come up with a great concept. Makes nice diagrams. Fits together nicely. Seasons of the year. Beautiful. Well done. I'm not a pastor. I live in the real world. Have a word. Like, how do I even begin to shoehorn any of my life into this? Does this even really work? Does it make any sense at all? Or did it just look good on a page or a whiteboard? Well, actually, as I've been reflecting through our season, or through our series, I realized I've already been doing this in part of my life, and I got one example for you. A number of years ago, as our kids got a little bit older, we realized that, Laurie and I, we're better parents if we fight hard for once a year trying to get away without our kids for a night. It makes us better parents. And so we save up all our Tesco vouchers and multiply them up and all that, and we try to get to a hotel for a night or a couple of nights once a year. And when we did that, the first couple of times, we were pretty high octane. We're usually going, running pretty hard, summer season, getting her done. We hit like a Wednesday, it's time to go to a hotel, and it's like just wrenching a handbrake. Don't talk about work, don't think about work, just rest, because you got to rest, because we saved all these vouchers, so you better do it, or it's wasted money. I'm babysitting. And we just discovered that doesn't work. And we found this place that we really love down in Cavan. It's about a 4-hour drive. Maybe stop for some lunch on the way. And what we discovered is that actually we wanted to talk about work as we drove down. We wanted to discuss what had gone before in the day or the week or the month or the season. And rather than fighting that, we leant into that and went, well, okay, we can talk about work on the way down. And what it became was a really natural autumn season, a drive of reflection. Where we could talk about the things that have been hard and the things that have been good and the things we were struggling with, and we could leave them with the Lord. And so as we pulled into this wonderful hotel and cabin, we could go, now it's rest time. Now our hearts have actually meditated on some of the things that we've been carrying and struggling. And now I can lie in a sauna or a pool. And what I discovered actually, because I'm really rubbish at resting, is that became a really holy place for me. And they got this outdoor pool and there's bubbles and you can lie. And I found myself actually at one stage just weeping outside with no one around me because I was in rest and I needed healing. I needed the presence of Jesus in rest to restore what had been hard. I found myself in the sauna confessing, that's awkward, to Jesus, not anyone else. And him beginning to put me back together. And then we realized as we would drive home that actually we had ideas. And we had thoughts of what the next season might look like. And we had plans and we had things that we were longing to step back into, a spring season. This thing actually works. And I noticed internally, as I watched this pattern, something was happening in me. I would rest for a while and I would pray and I would talk to Jesus. I would heal. He'd put me back together. I would lay down some things. I would feel recharged. And then these ideas of work would start to drift in. And I'd be like, no, you can't do that. I'm resting, not working. But the more I fought it, the more it was there. And what I realized was it wasn't work, it was preparation. I was beginning to dream, beginning to imagine what might be possible. And I actually think there's this liminal space in the transition between spring and summer where daydreaming and dreaming with the Lord is really, really important. It's in dreaming that we begin to stir longings in our heart. It's in dreaming that we begin to connect with Jesus over his calling in our lives. As we think about transitioning from spring into summer, I think that's really important. Spring is about preparing for action. It's about getting ready to do some stuff. In the real world, getting her done. Concrete, tangible things. It's about lining up the how. How are we going to achieve the things that God's called us to? How are we going to live out the calling on our lives? But before we know the how, we need to know what, right? You can't make plans for something that you don't know what it is. And so actually that dreaming is really, really important in the winter-spring transition. Allowing our hearts to dream, to imagine. What is Jesus stirring in your heart? What if you left the question for how am I going to achieve that for a while and just imagined a what? What would it look like if Jesus had his way in your family? What would it look like for the kingdom to come in your workplace? I'm not asking you how to do that, but what would it look like? What are you not okay with in the world that would look differently if Jesus had his way? What's currently seemingly impossible, that if that river of his presence flowed in and through you, it would become possible? What if we allowed questions like that to stir without having to answer the how for just a moment? If you're stuck in winter, we need to do all the things that Andy talked last week. We need rest and we need healing and we need restoration. Of course we do. But as we sit in that, would you allow yourself some space to dream? Big, stupid, audacious dreams. The kind of dreams that are not in any way possible. Because I think the Lord's in them. There's something of a residue that's left that is possible. If you're stuck in winter, ask those who are not in winter to tell you stories of what they're seeing, of what's happening, because stories unlock possibility. And we don't share many stories from up here, and there's good reason for that. They're not really our stories to share. And they're not trophies to make our church look good. They're real things happening in real people's lives, but there's amazing things happening in our church and in our church community that if you went and asked, people would happily tell you. Go talk to our kids team. Our youth team and our compassion team, those who serve in hospitality and welcome in our worship environments, go and ask them, what are they seeing? We had 40 here at our youth club on Friday night. Some of our youth staged a takeover. They wanted to run it. It was absolute carnage in the best possible way. God's moving and stirring and working. There are people in our church who are spending their lives taking the kingdom into prisons. There are people in our church community who are spending their lives teaching and training churches that are underground in parts of the world where you're not allowed to gather to do church. There are people in this room right now who have been called to this city to bring the kingdom and have laid down their lives for that. What if you ask them their stories? What's happening? It stirs something in us. So we come into a spring season. A passage that you might want to spend some time in is Nehemiah. A wonderful book. Nehemiah is an exile about 130 years after our passage in Ezekiel 47. And I'll just read the opening chunk of Nehemiah chapter 1. In the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, while I was in the citadel of Susa, Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men, and I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile, and also about Jerusalem. They said to me, "Those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire." When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. He hears this story. He asks, you know, these guys come from home and he says, "Tell me about it. Tell me about the city. Tell me about the people." And the story he hears is not what he's hoping for. Jerusalem's in ruins. Our people are in disgrace. And it stirs something in him, something he's not okay with. And it begins a season of preparation. It leads Nehemiah into the season of spring, of getting ready for action. I can just imagine him sitting down and thinking, what would it look like for Jerusalem and the temple to be rebuilt? What would it take for him to be part of making that happen? How might he prepare? How might he get ready? And it leads him into the season of preparation. And as we feel the stirrings of a dream, maybe even a calling from the Lord, it's perfectly legitimate prayer practice to daydream with Jesus. I highly recommend it. Not all your praying needs to be deeply earnest. Some of it can be fun. But as we do that and something stirs within us, how do we respond? How do we begin to get ready? What do we do in a spring season? Well, it's about training and it's about preparing. And to be topical and culturally relevant, let's couch it with marathon runners. So those who are out running right now should be at their peak. A good runner knows that you can't stay at your peak. You want to be at peak ability on race day. And so you build towards this moment. And in the spiritual sense, we want to be at peak in summer, not in spring. Spring is a time of building. And everything they've been doing has built to this day. You know, they didn't start, not normal runners anyway, they didn't start with 20-mile runs in their training. They started slow and they built it up and they built muscle and stamina. The good ones probably studied nutrition and what they should be eating last night and how they should be preparing their body. They probably maybe even researched new trainers and brought some new gear and got ready to go for today so that when that, I was going to say whistle, I imagine it's not a whistle, a gun, whatever it is. Are they allowed guns at Stormont? I don't know. Dangerous territory. Whatever started them, they were ready to go. Everything built to that. And that's what spring season is about spiritually. From Nehemiah 1 to Nehemiah 2, where he begins to execute this plan that's been stirring, there's actually 4 months of waiting. The Bible very rarely gives us months. But there's a purpose in that. It's showing us that actually we need a season of preparation, that spring requires patience. We cannot just rush into summer. It is not rest, go, crash, go, crash. That's not how we're meant to live. We need patience. And as God begins to stir and speak in those dreams and those longings, it requires some things from us. The first thing we see in Nehemiah is self-awareness. As he sits down to pray before the Lord, he recognizes that he's part of the problem. He begins to confess his sins before the Lord, saying, look, I'm responsible partly here. And he's aware that not only is he part of the problem, but he's got some things he needs to learn and grow in. He needs the Lord's help. He can't do this thing on his own. He doesn't just hear about Jerusalem and jump up and run back and try to do something. He needs to prepare. He's not ready. There's self-awareness. He then takes responsibility. He commits himself to be part of the solution. It's not enough to go, there's a thing in the world that somebody should do, and I'm not somebody. He commits himself to it. He takes responsibility. And as God stirs dreams and longings and passions in us, actually part of spring is taking responsibility. Saying, yes, God, I hear that invitation. I'll step into it. I'll partner with you in it. And then he consecrates himself. Super important part of spring. Doesn't just rush to action. He spiritually prepares. He fasts and he prays and he gets before the Lord and he says, you know, clear me out, cleanse me, get me ready to do, to bear the weight of the thing that you're calling me into. If you're in a season of spring, consecration is important. Prayer and fasting before the Lord is important. And then he plans. He works out what he's going to need, how he's going to go about it, what he's got to achieve. He doesn't just get before the king and say, Jerusalem needs rebuilt, magic. He actually has a concrete plan. He's thought about it. He's prepared. He knows the ask that he needs to make as he comes before the king. In a season of spring, we need those things to see a dream move into a reality. We need time and discussion. Reading and learning and studying and thinking and meditating and conversation with others who know more than we know. learning, growing, watching others do the kind of ministry that we're called into. Those are rhythms for spring that are deeply, deeply helpful. And what's the fruit that we might see in spring? As we've seen before, in autumn is a time for wisdom being birthed internally in us as we reflect. Winter is a time for healing being put back together. I think spring, one of the fruits of spring is passion. Is passion and vision. And vision is just passion with a plan. You've all been around people who are super passionate, but like they've got no plan. You know when you blow up a balloon and let it go in a room, and it's like, right? Been around those people. They're like, yes, we're doing lots of things, but nobody knows what we're doing and nothing ever happens. And then you've probably been around those people who are really good planners, but they got no passion. Did it. Did it. Did it. It's so dull. And nobody follows them. Vision is a combination of passion and planning. And passion sometimes feels like a bad word. Sometimes we're afraid of passion. But we need it. We need it. It's really, really good. Especially if you've grown up in Northern Ireland and maybe in a Protestant tradition especially, we can almost buy this lie that emotion and passion is ungodly. What if I lose the run of myself? Following God is just about fact and truth and verses, and we need to like keep it steady. Those things are really good, but God is a passionate God. He is a God of emotion. He is a God of hunger and longing and desire. And those are good, good things that we should not fear. And it's one of the fruits of spring. I ran the marathon myself a few years ago. Not a brag. It was not pretty. But when I started to train in September, I was in no shape at all. And I managed 3 miles in my first run, I think, and it was brutal. And I came back, I got bullied into it by our storehouse staff. And I came back and I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to run a marathon. Not only that, I don't want to. I have no interest in going for a run ever again. This is horrible. There was no passion. But as I committed to the training, as I committed to it, actually what began to stir was a little bit of passion. I actually got a little bit excited about going out for a run. And by the time the turn of the year came, I was up to maybe 10 miles or so. And actually, dare I say it, quite enjoying running. As I prepared, the passion and the hunger began to build in me. If you're stuck in winter, find some passionate people. Passion is infectious. Ask them what's going on. Spend some time around them. Don't beat yourself up because you're not there, but allow their passion to stir some dreaming in you. A few months ago, our street team were out on a Friday morning, as they do, just connecting with those who are currently experiencing homelessness. And we came across a young lady, we'll call her Emma, it's not her real name, and good chat with Emma. As they were about to leave, they just said to Emma, look, is there anything we could pray for as we're going? And she said, oh yeah, pray I win the lottery. And they kind of all had a laugh. And then she got really serious. And she said, no, actually, I have this dream, and everybody thinks I'm crazy, and all my friends think I'm an idiot, but I can't let it go. I have this dream that if I won the lottery and I had the money, I would buy a house somewhere in the city and I would open a space where women could go during the day. Women like me. Women who have nowhere to go. A space where women, regardless of their scars, regardless of their story, regardless of what they've been through and what they've done, would feel welcomed and feel beautiful. Where they could wash off what they had to do the night before to survive. Where they could hide from the man that they had to do it with. Where they could be safe and seen and loved and cared for. Their team came back in, shared that story with me. I was undone. Vision, passion. Spent the next 4 days, week maybe, couldn't shake it. Just trying to work out, how do you buy a building? How do we make that vision a reality? Couldn't shake it. Stirred a longing and a hunger in me. We haven't opened Emma's house yet. Someday we might. But passionate people with vision stir passion and hunger and call the rest of us back to remember the things that we're made for. If you're stuck in winter, find some passionate people and listen to their stories. And as we do that, as we journey through spring, another fruit is faith. Faith is just a belief in what is possible. It's a holy expectation. And it begins to stir in us through that season of spring. Going from I'll never run a marathon to I think I might be able to do this tomorrow is an act of faith that's built as in the preparation and the training. What if we don't do spring? I got to keep moving. If we don't do spring, if we just do winter to summer with no plan, chances are it'll be a train wreck. Now, there's times you'll hear us say we're building the plane as we fly it. And sometimes that's okay. Sometimes it's just go time and we got to trust that God will be with us and fill the gaps, and that's fine. But generally speaking, trying to act without a plan is a really bad idea. Generally speaking, what will happen is we will head in the wrong direction. With the wrong action, we'll waste a lot of time and effort because we don't really know what we're doing. It'll leave us drained and exhausted and frustrated and probably feeling with lots of shame, lots of guilt. We really need that preparation time internally and externally in our plans. We need to get ready for the things that God is calling us into. How do we know when it's time to leave spring? Leaving is always going to be risky. It's always going to be a risk to move from spring into summer. You're beginning something. You're stepping out into something. You actually got to do something concrete and not just talk about it and plan for it and prepare for it. And that takes real courage. It takes real courage. The best laid plans will never be perfect. There will always be some tweaking to do. You could always ask one more what if question. You could always add one more line to a risk assessment. You could always plan one little bit more and never get anywhere. And at some point, we have to have courage to act. And you're ready when you've planned and you've prayed, like we sang about, and a window, a moment, an opportunity opens up. And you have faith, just a little bit of faith. I'm not saying you've got like full belief that the glory of the Lord's about to explode and revival's going to come. But just enough faith to say, I'm in. God, will you fill the gaps? It's time to go. That transition will always take courage and will take risk. And Nehemiah hits that point in chapter 2, 4 months later. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, which is a brilliant name. If you're pregnant right now, Artaxerxes. When wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? Dangerous, he could have been killed for being sad in the presence of the king. This can be nothing but sadness of heart. I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven and I answered the king, if it pleases the king and if your servant has found favor in your sight, let him send me to the city of Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. This is Nehemiah transitioning into summer, into go time, into execution. He finds himself before the king in the presence, bringing the king's wine. He's prayed for months. He's planned. He's got passion. Passion isn't always excitement and joy and happy and like, woohoo. Passion is also that deep longing. And here it's a sadness of heart. It's built to this grief, this longing that he cannot not act upon. Just be aware of that. He's got passion. He's got vision. And this window opens up. The king says, what's going on? What is it? What's wrong? And he's terrified. But he finds courage. And he makes the ask. He spills his well-laid plans. And he gets favor. He doesn't just say, king, could you do something about it? He says, I'm going to need this and this and this. You can read it through it in the rest of the chapter. And I need you to write this letter and provide these things. And it's go time. It's on. That's how we step into summer, when that window of opportunity opens up. And for lots of us, the things that hold us back are really rooted in fear. A fear of failure. Like, what if I try and it doesn't go well? What if I don't get it right? Here's the deal. You're going to fail. You're going to make mistakes. None of you are perfect. None of us are. Doesn't exclude you. It doesn't rule you out. God is not holding you in relationship with him up until the point where you make a mistake. His feelings for you are not contingent upon your performance. Some of us, it's fear of burnout. If I try, I'm going to get burnt out, so I better not do anything. You will get tired. When you do stuff, you get tired. But here's the deal. This is why we're talking about seasons and rhythms, so we don't get burnt out. Hence, you need autumn and winter. When we go for it. And then we rest. And then we go again. We need a faith that is bigger than our fears, that overrides our expectation of God's goodness and his presence with us and his calling in our lives. So what do I do in summer season? What should I be putting my mind to and my hands to? Well, firstly, don't hold back. It's go time. Like, this is the time to make hay while the sun shines. This is the time where we're going to see real, tangible fruit, where we're going to do real things in the real world. So don't hold back. The world is not served by you halving it. By going, oh, I'll do a little bit and don't want to seem too important. Go for it in summertime. Don't fear tired. Tired is not a sin. Tired is not burnout. Tired is you did some things you're supposed to do and now you're tired and you should sleep and recharge your body. I worked for a summer while I was at university on a building site. I've never done manual labor in my life. My body's not made for it. At the end of every day, I was utterly exhausted. That's not burnout. That's a contented, well-earned tiredness that sleep will recharge. If you have passion and you have vision and you are doing the right things, you will not burn out. You will get tired, and that's okay. That's not failure. When you're in summer, tell stories. What you have in summer is stuff that fuels others, that encourages others, that builds the body up. So tell the stories of what God is doing in and through you to anyone that will listen. Not in an arrogant way, not in a look how great I am way, but in a stirring passion and fire and encouraging others. We've got to celebrate in summer. We're going to see fruit. We're going to see God move in power, and that's a time for celebration. Invite others to come and be part of what you're doing. Bear the weight for others who aren't in the season of summer. How can I support you? How can I fill the gaps? How can I maybe serve a little extra on a different route for a season to help others? How can I support and encourage? In summer, you gotta expect opposition. If you read on in the story of Nehemiah as he goes to rebuild the city, these guys come to try and like stop him. They're locals. They're part. They should be on his team. And they come, they harangue him and they distract him and they tell lies to him and about him and they try to pull him away from this thing that God has called him to. Expect opposition. Doesn't mean you're failing. Probably means you're doing the right things. Stick hard to the plan that you've prepared. Remember the calling. Let the vision and the passion of the Lord carry you. Don't get distracted by the enemy and his junk. And a word of caution for summer is don't neglect the main and the plain. When we're in a season of fruitfulness, it's really tempting to chase the fruit. The fruit is not the goal, Jesus is. Time with him and his presence is more important than ever. Stay close to him. Stay in community. Keep those rhythms that need to be there all season. Keep them there. Sabbath is still for summer. Summer doesn't mean you like just do 7 days, 24/7, whatever. Rest, time with the Lord, time away. Still deeply important in the season of summer. What's the fruit? Well, obviously in the summer we should expect to see external fruit like extra ministry multiplied and healing and salvation, the power of the Lord upon the things that we turn our hands to, maybe increased serving in areas. But internally, one of the things that you should expect to see in summer is joy. Like a deep joy. We sang about it just a moment ago. It's a different, that different kind of tiredness when you've been doing the right things and giving your all to it releases this contented joy deep within. It's not just about the external fruit, but it's about knowing that you give everything you had to the thing the Lord asked of you, that you were faithful with what he gave you. And this joy stirs on the inside. Joy in seeing God move in power and knowing that we're in step with him and we're seeing others stirred up around us. What if I don't? What if I don't do summer? What if I never get to that point of action? Some of this is really obvious. Like, stuff doesn't happen, right? We miss the call of God on our lives. If we constantly live in the, there's just one more what if, there's just one more unanswered question, there's just, it's just not right time, the opportunity's just not there, we miss the call of God on our lives. He made us for partnership with him. He made us for plans and purposes to bring his kingdom to bear in the world around us. But he wants to do it with us and through us. And if we constantly say, no, not yet, I'm not ready, not me, someone else, we miss the call of God in our lives. And I kind of believe that God will still do what God wants to do. We just miss out. I often wonder how many people didn't make it into the Bible because they said no when God called them. And he just went, oh, okay. You're going to say no, I'll find someone else. You'll say yes. Isn't that a sobering thought? It's maybe heretical. I don't know. I think it's interesting. God has a call on your lives. But he's also not going to wait forever. If we keep saying no, he'll find someone, he'll say yes. And we miss out. We miss out on the intimacy that comes in partnership with him. We miss out on the joy of knowing we're walking in the fullness of the things that he's made us for. There's one other thing that I think is a caution that happens. I've seen this with people who never quite make it to summer. They become armchair experts. You know the kind of people that never really actually ever played a football match in their life, but like no better than the Premier League managers and tell everybody how it should be run? Yeah, a bit like that. There's this thing that comes when we resist the call of God in our lives to step into action, to step into summer, when we miss it. That we kind of think we did it because we did all the preparing bits, and then we start telling others how they really should do it and how it's not going to work. And not only do we miss the call of God in our lives, but we run the risk of undermining the call of God in other people's lives. I can't count the number of times I've seen young leaders coming up with passion and vision and enthusiasm, and they haven't failed yet, and they haven't because they haven't tried yet, but they're ready to go, and somebody who thinks they're being older and wiser comes along and goes, that'll never work. Oh, don't do that. Wouldn't do it that way. It's going to be really hard. You'll probably burn out. I'm like, no, shut up. They've got to feel. Let them feel for themselves. And we undermine the call of God on other people's lives. I want to get to be old, where I'm not running hard. And I want to be an armchair cheerleader, where I'm in the background going, you got this. Like, I believe in you, reach for it. You're going to feel, and that's fine, because God will still love you, and you'll learn some things, and you'll go again, but go. I'm encouraging you, if you want wisdom from the years of things I've done, happy to share it, but I believe in you. Go. And we only get that when we've lived through seasons of summer ourselves, when we've tried some things in the real world in partnership with God. Spring, summer, autumn, winter, different rhythms, different fruit. It's possible. It's possible to bear fruit in every season of our lives if we'll walk in step with God. And as Andy's reminded us over the last couple of Sundays, we need to constantly remind ourselves that with Jesus, it's always a season of grace if we'll turn to him. Hebrews 13:8 says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Our seasons may change. Our seasons should change. But he doesn't change. He He's faithful. He's the way. He's the truth. He's the life. He's the sustainer. He has all we need in every season of life if we'll come to him. And he has endless grace for the places we've got it wrong and the places that we're trying to strive instead of rest and we're trying to do instead of receive or we're trying to avoid instead of do. He's got endless grace for us if we'll come to him. Amen? Why don't you stand and pray for us as we close. Holy Spirit, we don't presume to control you in any way. But we invite you, would you stir in our presence? Would you come minister to our hearts? Where we feel stuck in winter, would you begin to stir passion and vision, hunger? Would you whisper callings on our lives? Some of you in the room, there's actually a moment where somebody told you, don't be so emotional. Like God's like resolute and it's just truth and just do the right things. Just stay steady. Ignore your emotions. And it's left you with an inability to trust passion. But I just feel like the Lord wasn't in that and he wants to bring some healing. Restore that ability to dream and imagine and long and have a passion and a vision that's from him. Some of us, we've tried summer without spring and it's just been a mess. And we feel like it's ruled us out of ever going again. That's not the Lord's intention. It's healing, restoration for you today. And some of us are just battling fear. Fear is just bullying us, just holding us back, holding us down. Again, I'll have a chance to pray for you. Is there somebody really struggling with a pain in your left hip? I felt like I wanted to heal that. So if that's you, I'd love to pray for you. So I'm going to pray for us in close. There'll be a team who are trained to pray. You'll come and join me at the front. If that's you and you're trained in our church, I'd love to have you. Help us. And we'd love to pray for anything that's stirred up or anything that's going on in your lives right now. There'll be tea and coffee at the back and you can collect your kids. So Jesus, we just say thank you. Thank you that you're in our midst. Thank you that you are a God of vision, a God of passion, and a God that delights in partnering with us to see your kingdom come. Pray, would you stir us? Would you equip us? Would you call us into more? And would you send us into this week carrying your presence in the full confidence that what seems impossible is possible with you? So come have your way in us. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this message. For all the latest information about what's happening in the life of our church, or if you have any questions or comments, head over to BelfastCityVineyard.com.